Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Dave Sands. Welcome to the Food Origins Podcast. I'll be talking to people about their unique stories with food. And as a quick reminder, the restaurants and gear talked about on each episode can be found on my website, foodoriginspodcast.com. I appreciate your support. Thanks for listening. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Food Origins Podcast. Today, my guest is Adrian Hoffman. He's the CEO and co-founder of Four Star Seafood and Provisions in San Francisco, California. Adrian was born and raised in Boston, started cooking at a young age, and it kind of took him all over the world into from Boston to New York to London to Israel to France and Tokyo and then back to San Francisco. He became the chef at One Market Restaurant and worked for almost 14 years with the Lark Creek Restaurant Group. Adrian talks about how he got started with the seafood company after that, and we get into what they provide, his chef-to-chef concept, bringing all his experience and able to provide some of the best ingredients possible to all these chefs and restaurants all over the Bay Area. And we get into some of their new provisions, dealing with the pandemic, expansion. They have their brick and mortar called Billingsgate. Really enjoyed this conversation. It was on location in San Francisco, and appreciate the support, and thanks for listening. Boom, we're rolling. I'm here with Adrian Hoffman. He's the CEO and co-founder of Four Star Seafood and Provisions, and otherwise known as a fishmonger extraordinaire. And we're on location in San Francisco. So I appreciate you, Adrian, for coming on, and thanks for letting me talk to you.
Dave, thanks for having me on. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Let's dive right into, you know, where you're from, where you grew up, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so grew up, born in Boston, family moved out to the suburbs, and grew up there.
So. What was it like? I mean, you know, what was it like growing up in Boston, and then now you're on the West Coast? How's
yeah,
that?
Yeah, very, very different mindsets, it seems. But, you know, it's only through the group of people that we know in each coast. But, yeah, even in parts of Boston, it's different from one kind of part of the city to another. There's a lot of subcultures in Boston. not a huge city, but a lot going on, from the educational sector to blue collar to it has a huge tech sector now too. So
for sure. And you know, I know you got into cooking at a young age, but what was it like? What'd you eat growing up? That's kind of where I start.
Yeah, so this is the story. Is my family, and my family to this date, are all vegetarian, and so they raised me vegetarian, and on top of that, they're not the best cooks in the world, and so you name it, like the broccoli in a pressure cooker until you could spread it. It's just terrible. So kind of out of survival, I ended up getting a job in a restaurant when I was 13 as a busboy. And I always loved going out to eat because it was a break from the food that we had at home.
Sure.
And so that was fun. I started as a busboy, and then the pizza cook quit, and they said, Adrian, you want to come back and make pizzas with us? And yeah, so that was the last like 30 something years of my life.
Yeah. I mean, let's get into that. I mean, but obviously not as exciting as far as food growing up, but you know, what changed for you? Did you stay a vegetarian, or at what point did you get into food?
More, you know, or less when I started working at the restaurant, I started trying a bit of this and a bit of that. I remember having like these little fried bay scallops on the East Coast, and I remember them now. And they were the first thing that I was like, oh, this is really good. And nobody does fried bay scallops out here, but every once in a while, they're good. Every once in a while, like I bring home some of the Nantucket Bays and do a thin batter on them and fry them, and they're really decadent.
Yeah, so that was kind of your intro to opening up your palate.
Yeah.
At that point.
Yeah.
And was
I,
it?
Yeah. Then yeah. I really enjoyed cooking. So I worked the pizza station. I ended up working the other stations in this little kind of family Italian restaurant in Framingham, and tried everything along the way. That was kind of how I started. And it was all an acquired taste. I didn't love meat and seafood generally on the first bite, but I wanted to like it, so I kept trying, and now, yeah, then I developed a palate for it all.
Wasn't it kind of like, I remember one of the first restaurants I worked at, they made me try everything. Was it kind of like that too, where like, hey, you kind of got to know, as you started moving through the stations, they're like, hey, you need to know everything in your station, you better try it all.
Sure, sure. This was it was just like a family Italian restaurant, right? So it wasn't like little tasting spoons everywhere that we see at higher end restaurants now, but yeah, you had to make everything taste good. So yeah, and I wanted to. Like I think I really wanted. I was a very rebellious teenager, and my parents were vegetarian. I wanted to not be vegetarian, and so I taught myself to really enjoy meat and seafood.
Yeah, and did you train through the restaurant, or did you end up going to culinary school at all or anything like that?
Nope. It was my after school job through high school. And then I went to Brandeis outside of Boston, and I studied philosophy and art and economics, and all I kind of put myself through college by taking the train into Boston and working at a restaurant in Boston and then coming back. And so I did that for a while. And when it was really just a way to get myself through college and have a bit of money to spend and pay for school expenses. So, I did that for a while, and then after college, I worked at a restaurant in Boston where I actually worked for Barbara Lynch, who's a very famous Boston chef now, but she wasn't very famous at the time, and she had opened Figs for Todd English, and then this was kind of her first break. It's a restaurant called Rocco's on Charles Street. But yeah, it was wonderful. And all of a sudden, like, I'm working for a chef who really cared. My other jobs weren't bad jobs, but they were kind of like I worked at this place. It was just a fish house. And so did that for years, and you do everything from fried fish to baked fish. But you don't really see much of that really outside of the Northeast. But yeah, then, so that was like my after school work. And then right after I graduated, I started working with Barbara, and it was really, like an eye opener where people really cared and they were passionate about what they were doing and totally got into the food and the details, and it was delicious. Yeah. I loved it. It was really motivating.
Where'd you go from there?
So I worked there, after I graduated, and then I think I had a bad roommate situation that bounced a red check on me, and I'm like, screw this, I got to get out of here. And I moved to San Francisco, and this is back in 90, at the very end of 93, I moved from Boston to San Francisco, and I had also gotten into doing some electronic music, and I was like, oh, maybe I'll be a musician, or maybe I'll keep cooking, and obviously cooking pays the bills. And so I kind of kept going with that, and, got my first, I guess my first real job out here back at the very beginning of 94 was at Moose's on Washington Square with Lance Velasquez. And, yeah, we had a pretty good time and, doing great food, and went with him to open this thing in Berkeley years and years ago. And, ultimately went from there and moved to New York and cooked in New York for a while.
Nice. And what was the one, what did you guys open something in Berkeley, or was that not restaurant related?
Yeah, no. It was, I think it was called Restaurant LDV at the time, mm-hmm. after Lance's initials.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Right on. Is there anything like right out the gate, like besides, you know, the cooking at home, is there stuff that you didn't like when you started cooking that you hated, you know, that you didn't taste, you know, that didn't taste good, but then now you love it. You're like, absolutely. Like, this is something I really enjoy now.
I mean, I hated all kinds of foods growing up, but probably for the wrong reasons. They're just prepared wrong. But I hated mushrooms. I hated eggplant. I hated all kinds of stuff. The only thing that I still kind of hate that my parents used to cook was millet. And, I don't really understand the culinary value of it, but there must be in there somewhere.
Okay. Right on. And then obviously your palate changes. Where'd you go? So you went back to New York and then now you're cooking back in New York. Where are you cooking at?
Yeah. So I got to New York. I got a job at the River Cafe and I was there. I don't know how long I was there for. But then I got an opportunity to open up Osteria del Circo with the Maccioni's of Le Cirque. And I went and did that with the chef. There was like a trio of chefs there at the time, but one of them was Michael Cimarosti of Providence in L.A. right now. So that was kind of his first chef gig. And it was a blast. Really had such a good time and did that for a while. And towards the end of it, the Maccioni sent me to their place in Tuscany for like a spring holiday, and I wanted to work, and so they hooked me up at a restaurant in on the coast called Ristorante Romano, and I worked there, and I'm like, wow, this is great. And it was really my first time traveling abroad, and then I got the travel bug, and came back, and I was really restless, and all I wanted to do was get back to Europe somehow. So I started sending out applications I decided I was going to go to London. I felt like it would be the easiest next step. So I sent out applications, or I forget how we did it in those days. I think I sent out snail mail and...
Probably and, back then,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and...
Because it wasn't like staging
to,
back then.
To the
then
best restaurants around London. And I was like, look, I'd really like an opportunity to move to London. If you have an opportunity, I'd love to be there for it. And I was really hoping to get somebody to say they'd hire me before I
got over there
and was like just knocking on doors. But so I did. I got a job at a restaurant called Bank. Kind of a interesting large scale restaurant along the lines of there's kind of a renaissance of restaurants in London before then, with Terence Conran's restaurants, like Queglino's. And it was all of a sudden there were like large restaurants doing mid to high end food and doing it well. So Bank was really along that generation of things. And like London had started to shake its kind of bad food reputation at
right,
the time.
Right, because everyone would say it's bland and boring.
Yeah, and everyone would think of pub food, and it's all about steak and kidney pie and that kind of thing. But
right.
And they always had a group of very high-end restaurants that were exceptional, like Rue Brothers and Raymond Blanc and stuff that always did this super high-end stuff. So there's always a few of those, but there wasn't any mid-range. So I kind of got there after the renaissance of mid-range restaurants doing things well.
Nice. And what kind of food were you making?
I guess contemporary French at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I did that for a while, and then I worked with Gordon Ramsay at his first restaurant, Aubergine, and
oh, nice.
For a little bit. Awesome. And I worked... at Chez Nico for a little bit, all which were pretty intense experiences.
Is he a tyrant?
I got some stories, but it wasn't as much him. But it was his whole crew was on meth.
Whole crew.
it was just like unpleasant, really. Like beautiful food and everything. I'll never take that away from it. But the experience was fairly unpleasant.
Do you agree that like more back then it was all about the chef like running? You know, I don't know. They're always the captain of the ship, and you got to do it their way or the highway, kind of, right?
Well, yeah.
You couldn't even be. You were a robot, sort of, and
yeah.
Just,
and there was all kinds of stuff that happened back in English kitchens in those days, and people smacking each other regularly, and it was just normal, and nobody. There was even exposés. There was one on Ramsay, and there was one on the guy at L'Ortolan. Before him, and you just wouldn't get in trouble for hitting a cook. It's crazy to think about. But I remember being there going, wow, if I really stick this out and I go back to the United States, I'm going to end up in jail. Like it's not going to work. So I didn't stay all that long.
And then I know you traveled some more. So you ended up at some point you traveled a little bit more. You got some other countries too, right?
Yeah, so I after London, I came back to the Boston area, and I worked for Todd English for a couple of years, and working at Olives in Charlestown, and he had an opportunity to partner up with Michael Gnorr and open up. Michael Gnorr just died a few days ago, actually, which is terrible, but. But the two of them had the opportunity to open up a restaurant in Israel, and Michael was a big Zionist and kind of got it set up and knew a lot of people in Israel. He did the Israeli army and was always bringing chefs over there to show off. And so he brought us over there to do this project in Eilat in the south of Israel. And so I kind of jumped at the opportunity to go and do something else. So I did that for a while and ended up meeting somebody there, and then we spent a lot of time traveling in Europe together and ended up working in the south of France, and from there kind of backpacked for a year, ended up in Japan, and after Japan came back to San Francisco.
Whoa, you skipped over Japan and France. Tell us a couple of things that impacted you in France and Japan.
Yeah, I mean, the seafood there was just incredible. So, the fish that we served, like, worked in the south in a town called La Vendue, where the specialty was bouillabaisse. And it was a little one-star Michelin restaurant, kind of resort sort of thing. And, we'd get the fish every morning that we'd sell that day, and that was just the way it worked. And we do the same thing again the next day and the next day after that, and it was just the standard for it.
Right. The way it should be.
Yeah, kind of the way it should be. Yeah. Right. And it's just very different in the United States. We'll get into how we ended up in the seafood business later. But
for sure.
But that was an early
sign of understanding. Yeah. And then Japan, I'm partial to Japan being half Japanese. So I got to hear about Japan, tell us how that went.
Our backpacking led us kind of by land from where we're working in France to all the way through. We spent a lot of time in Nepal and India and then Thailand. And then I said, well, before we go home, why don't we try another country to like actually stop and work and, see what happens there. And so we flew into Tokyo, and I gave us a week to like either get a job or we had to leave and come back home. And it must have been the fifth day, but I went door to door knocking on every French restaurant. And in, if you've spent time in Japan, there's an affinity between the French and the Japanese. And all French restaurants have a French flag on the outside of it, and you go in, and I spoke enough French at that point to barely introduce myself and say I wanted to work. And I successfully landed a job at this little 17 seat restaurant in Shinjuku. And, it was fun. It was very small little place, classic French bistro food. I did it for a little while, and the owner really liked the way I cooked. He's like, okay, why don't you start working on the menus? And so I had fun doing that for a while, but ultimately it wasn't really like a career move. Like it allowed me to be in Japan for a while, which I really wanted, but it wasn't a career move. So, I hung out for about 6 months and then decided to come back to the States to look for what would be the next step.
Nice. Did you ever get a chance to cook in any of the Japanese restaurants or kind of some behind the scenes stuff? No.
Nope. I did not. It was pretty difficult, like being illegal working there, actually. Yeah, like fairly locked down. So the reason I got into this little French restaurant is because everything was sort of under the table, and he's like, yeah, I like you, I'll hire you. But like at any of the places, like I think there's an outpost of Tour d'Argent there, it wasn't Tour d'Argent, it was Thai Avant. It was like a Thai Avant Robuchon project. So I really wanted to work there, and the chef's name was Alan at the time, and we really hit it off, but he's like, I can't hire you because you don't have papers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I get it. So So I just couldn't find one that I was like a job that I was really excited about that was make sense to stay for much longer.
Sure. It'd give you a little more lengthy stay. Nice.
Yep.
And then you came back. Did you come back right to Boston?
I came back to Boston and started putting feelers out. I entertained all kinds of things. I entertained a job at like Aman Resorts in Bali and did a brief week there and tasting form and that kind of thing. But then they wanted too much of a commitment and I couldn't do that. So I ended up getting a job in San Francisco. So I came back here and threw a little bit roundabout, but I got the job as chef of One Market. And so that was back in 2000, October of 2000. And had a good run there. I was with that company for 14 years.
Yeah, the Lark Creek Group, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And then you ended up basically running a bunch of different restaurants for Lark Creek.
Yeah,
right?
So I did One Market for 4 years and then hired Mark as my replacement. Mark's still the chef there now. Great guy, very, very talented chef. And moved into a senior management position as culinary VP and culinary director for Lark Creek. And we had opened up to, I think, 15 restaurants at one time and, you know, ups and downs and stayed with them through the end of 2014.
Okay. And then that takes us right into kind of how you decided to start a seafood company.
Yeah, so somewhere along the way, I had this meal in Portugal, and it was off the coast of Porto, or like right on the coast of Porto, where I just had the best seafood meal of my life. It was outrageous, and there's nothing like all the fish and the shellfish that we had was just sweet and delicious, and it was simply prepared and perfect. But it was really inspiring on what could be done with perfect fish. And I remember coming back to San Francisco going, well, there's commercial fishing ports here. Why can't we get the quality of fish that I had there? Like, I'm sure, like, yeah, you could argue that the water is better or whatever, but we just don't get that quality of fish out here. And so I said, someday I'm going to open a seafood company, and it's going to be the simplest thing in the world. I'm going to buy fish from the boats. I'm going to sell it to restaurants, and that'll be the beginning and the end of it. So so I guess at the beginning of 2015, my business partner, Ismail Macias, my now business partner, he had worked with me back at One Market since I started. He was there before me and then left around more or less around the same time I did to go travel around the world and work at these great restaurants and Noma and 11 Madison and all these places. So he had finished doing, I think, a year and a half of staging around and working at these places. And I'd been doing some consulting, but I just didn't enjoy it. And consulting wasn't fun for me. And we had dinner one night and was like, well, what's next? And we're talking about each other's plans. And I'm like, well, it was a little bit roundabout, but ultimately we're like, well, I had this idea a long time ago to open up a seafood company and why don't we research that? Is that something you'd be into? And he's like, sure, let's go. So I think the next day we drove down to Half Moon Bay and started talking to the boats down in Princeton by the sea. And they had gorgeous fish on their boats. And I'm like, huh, how come like I never see this in our restaurants?
Yeah.
Like never, ever. And they're like, I don't know, but if you want to buy the fish, just, you know, pay me a dollar more than the other guy that's buying my fish now. So I'm like, all right, I don't see why not. And so we opened up the company. We started buying fish from the boats down in Half Moon Bay, and we'd drive it up to the city and sell it like literally hours out of the water. And our calling card at the beginning, we met this guy down at Princeton, Pete the Greek, and he would go out and he would net these beautiful sardines, and they were really being used for bait more than anything else. He's a Greek guy, so he liked to eat them, but most people weren't eating them. So he came in and he would net them and then have them alive, like open up his net, and people could take a scoop of sardines out, and we're like, oh, these things are gorgeous. And so we used those as our calling card when we started. We'd go to every restaurant in town where we knew the chefs and drop them off a pound of sardines here, a pound of sardines there. And Yeah, if you see the difference between a sardine that's been out of the water a few days and one that just came out is night and day. Just
typically canned, you see them also a lot of times. Sure. Yeah,
which is fine, right? There's nothing wrong with that, but it's but it's different than a sardine that's just out of the water.
And that was
right?
a nice, giving them something to taste, and they're like, oh, if this is your starter, then what else you got? You know? Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I was going to ask you about the fresh sardines, and then. You also partnered with another seafood guy that was working like right at the same location that you guys started, right? Pier 45.
Yeah. So, for sure. So we started in the middle of 2015.
Yeah.
At the beginning of 2016, we decided we needed to stop working out of my garage, and we found a corner of a warehouse on Pier 45. And we sublet it from a company called All Shores, and they're kind of like distributors. They sell to other wholesalers. So we rented out a little corner of their warehouse, maybe 100, 200 square feet. Kane also was working out of the same warehouse, renting his bit of space there. Over the next few months, we watched him work. He watched us work, and we decided we liked what each other was doing. So ultimately he decided to give up his own company and come and join us, and we made him a partner, and it's been great ever since. Kane's wonderful.
Awesome. And then we'll get into what you guys offer, which is a huge, huge, huge list. But once you kind of once you started doing sardines, then what did you get into and what you're offering these days?
Yeah, pretty interesting. So we started in the summer. And didn't really, we didn't know what we were doing. We were just kind of making it up as we go. But during the summer, there's all kinds of fish available. And we realized sort of September-ish that, seasons were kind of winding down. Mm-hmm. And we weren't going to be able to get this beautiful king salmon and this other fish that we were getting, literally every day picking up at the pier. And we realized that those seasons would close down.
We had
no idea. But so we're like, well, we better start sourcing in other places to get fish for when this stops so we can keep the business going. So I'm originally from Boston, as we spoke about, and I called some friends in Boston, and they said, well, this is where you go. So we really just made a whole bunch of calls and got great references from some friends, and had fish shipped out from Boston starting 5 days a week. And we learned how to do the logistics involved with overnight shipping that we still do. We still fly fish from Boston 5 days a week. And there we kind of have a little hub in Boston where, the lobster guy from Maine comes down, the scallop guy from Maine. We have oyster and shellfish company that we work with, and a few farms. We have two finfish companies that we work with, squid, all these kind of things that come out of Boston all meet in one place. They all get wrapped up into one airway bill now and shipped out here daily.
Nice. And then what kind of fish is coming out of Boston?
Everything from wild striped bass to black sea bass to all kinds of oysters and, of course, lobsters.
Okay. Did you guys ever have a boat of your own that's catching seafood or anything like that?
No. Everybody talks about oh, it's my boat, but no, we don't own any boats, and we don't want to own any boats. And okay. we've developed relationships with a good handful of captains that own their boats that basically we agree to buy what they catch.
Yeah. If something carries the 4-star seafood name, what does that entail then? I noticed on some of the products have the 4-star seafood. Is that just your connection and where it's coming from and all that?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what you're referencing, but
some of them have a brand, we'll get into your dry goods and your charcuterie and stuff. They have a particular brand, but on some of it, it just says 4-star seafood.
Oh, you know what? I think maybe it still does, but we're trying to migrate away from that, and instead in that area, we just put the area that it's from.
Got it.
So, West Coast Petrale Sole, West Coast King Salmon, or from what area that we're getting it from, Fort Bragg Sea Urchin,
that's definitely
thing.
What people want to know these days, for sure. Indeed. And then that's just your seafood. they're you know, and now it's provisions, right? So yep. You're starting to get into You have meat, produce, dairy. You got meal boxes, bakery items, pantry. You want to highlight some of the, you know, some of those items,
yeah.
And shout out to Guillaume Bien-Aimé of Zola. He introduced us. He was like, make sure you ask Adrian about their charcuterie. So yeah. Why don't you talk about their charcuterie?
Yeah, pretty interesting. So when we, back in 2016, we realized that people started to get our brand, and they trusted us as chefs kind of selling to chefs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, I'd always rather buy from somebody that knew what I was going through and could relate to what I was doing on a culinary level. So that really works for us. So our niche is kind of like chef to chef. Mm-hmm. And in addition to all the kind of things that we pulled from locally, from local black cod and local live spot prawns and farmed abalone that we get up and down the coast, we started bringing in non-seafood items. And we started off with a charcuterie line that I used when I was a cook in New York, and Salumeria Bialese, and they're just awesome. So I said, well, look, if I like these, there's a good chance that the chefs that we're working with will also enjoy them. So we started bringing in this salumi, and before you knew it, we were selling a couple hundred pounds a week, and we're like, wow, who would have thought? Like, yeah. We're a seafood company selling this really wonderful salumi and charcuterie. And so we went from there, and we did that, and cheese, and then truffles and mushrooms and foraged items. And we started to take on oils and vinegars, and then COVID happened.
Yeah.
And all of the restaurants went away, and we, like, literally the weekend before they called for shelter in place, we threw up a website, and we're like, this isn't going to go well. Like, we need to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So we put up a website, and on that Monday that it was announced, we launched our kind of D2C business. And where we I figured, look, we have all these drivers, we have all these trucks, we have all this product. Yeah. Why don't we start just selling it to the home consumer? Because you can't go to supermarkets, or no one's very comfortable doing that. And let's get it going. And then we started to call our friends that we'd bought from when we were chefs, and we call our local farmers and ranchers, and they were in the same situation. So they're like, yeah, we'd love another outlet for what we do, because we're not gonna be able to sell them to restaurants anymore.
Yeah.
So we did that, and we really came up with a fairly massive collection of dry goods, produce, dairy, meats that we still pack to this day daily in boxes for the home consumer.
Yeah, and that's an amazing pivot that turned into this, like, array of stuff. I mean, I could go on and on, but you have, like, huckleberries, you have butter from Stepladder, you have, some different puddings. Is that Petit Pot?
Yeah.
So you got that. And then what's cool is, too, is you've gone full bore with the meal boxes, too. I know some people do, you know, like meat companies. You got Flannery Beef, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I've heard really good
things. Awesome.
I've heard
so
really
good
things
they're
about
so
them.
Good. I love that company.
Yeah. So shout out to them. And then you've got some of these. Yeah, the meal boxes are pretty cool. I saw you got a Chipino box, Poke box. Yeah. Sushi, the foodie box. What's the foodie box? It's kind of your selection,
so,
right?
Yeah,
chef's choice.
So we have a few boxes that are depending on what you want to spend or what your, you know, what your food style is. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of a mystery box.
Yeah.
So we run around the warehouse and we pick out all kinds of things that we think would be fun, and it's like a pound of this, a pound of that, and here's some, like, you know, preserved artichokes and candied strawberries, and we're going to put a little bit of these in there, and it's really fun.
That's awesome. It's like an omakase for
meat, like, grocery box.
Yeah, and you got a ton of stuff. So is it all kind of like the salumi, where you have experience with it, and this is, you're like, oh, I
yeah,
really like that.
Most of it yeah. We do. So
because, like, you have a lot of Japanese ingredients, which I was looking at, like a lot of the haku soy sauces. Yep. And vinegars and stuff. Are those some of the ones you're like, oh, I cooked with that, or you have chefs that were like, hey, that's really good, so you need to have it?
At this point, it's come from all different sources where it's been recommended by somebody, or we've tried it. We try it. We think it's amazing.
Yeah.
And then we bring it on. I mean, it sounds crazy, but we probably sell a pallet of Binchotan charcoal a week. Along the way, we started selling it, and it just got busier and busier, and a lot of people know us as the place to go for Binchotan now.
Nice.
So we keep it in stock all the time, and we deliver 10 boxes a day easily.
Awesome. Yeah, and it's the flavor on that is amazing for yakitori and for sure. Izakayas. And then you have like other stuff too, like you have Dario's olive oil in there. Is that something you tasted?
Yeah, the line, well, we kind of trusted that one, right? So we did a line of Dario Cecchini products. So he's got a mostarda and a seasoned salt and olive oil and a senape, which is a kind of mostarda. And he's the chef's darling. Everybody loves him, and it's for good reason. I've had his food, he's got this massive personality. So more power to him.
That's awesome. I heard he's in LA, I think, with Nancy this week or recently. Yeah. And then I noticed you're known for I was looking at some of the bestsellers, The Smoked Sturgeon. How's that? How'd that come about?
Yeah, pretty interesting. So we have a partnership with California Caviar, and they bring their sturgeon here to do the extraction from. They need a special facility to do it, which ours qualifies at. So they bring it here. They bring some chefs, because they have a lot of chefs work with them directly to brand their own caviar, and they'll bring the whole fish here that's been stunned and then open them up and pull out the eggs here in a sanitized space, and then they bring it all to Sausalito, where they do the final processing of the caviar. And what we get kind of in return is a really good deal on these massive caviar sturgeon. So they're like 80 to 120 pounds. Ooh, and they've been, in order to make really high quality caviar, as they do, they get purged really well. So most farm sturgeon around, like, I'll actually have a kind of muddy flavor, and I'm not really a big fan of it. But this stuff is really just big, thick fillets, and it's super clean. It's a really high end fish, and it's a really good deal with us.
Awesome, yeah. That's and you've got so much stuff. Like, I could go on and on, but like, you got honeys, you got different nuts, grains, rice. You got some. Aiden Ferments?
Yeah, Aiden's a local company, and they do. They make misos.
Yeah.
And koji and stuff. It's killer.
Yeah. You ever get to cook with any? Have you cooked with any of the stuff like koji?
You know what? My background is all regional European.
European,
let's say,
yeah.
and a bit of Americana. So I've never. I eat a lot of Asian food, but I've never really cooked it. And I feel like it's a completely different discipline. And while I've spent my life learning to cook Western food well, I feel like people have done the same with Eastern flavors. And they'll do it better than I will.
Awesome. And then with all this stuff, Guillaume wanted me to ask you, when do you sleep?
Yeah, what's that? I don't sleep much. I get up. My alarm goes off at 3:30.
You have a crazy shift. Yeah. Why don't you tell us your shift? What's a day like? A day in the life.
Yeah.
For you.
But the alarm wakes me up at 3:30 if I don't wake up before. And then I go and I proof orders that have come in. I place orders for Boston. Like I said, we fly out of Boston 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to get those orders in by 4 a.m. our time in order to have all the logistics work out, so they make their flight and the lobster guy in Maine brings his lobsters down to Logan and all this kind of stuff. So it's simply an early morning business. Our warehouse right now down in Egbert is a 24 hours a day operation where it just never stops here. It's 24 hours. We always have somebody working. We've recently started some expansion to the Los Angeles market, and we're sending trucks down there 5 nights a week as we look for a permanent warehouse space. So we're packing Los Angeles orders like late afternoon into the evening, and then our cutting room really fills up at about midnight, where they start cutting everybody's fish that they're going to get that day, that morning. So
wow. And then you also have a location too, right, in Noe Valley?
We opened up Billingsgate, which is a fresh seafood market and cafe in on 24th Street in Noe Valley. And it's really a project that we'd wanted to do for a while, and it took a couple years to build because of COVID, but it opened up in December 2020, which is a precarious time, but it killed it right out the door.
You probably filled the need up there.
When we started, because everybody like needed to find a place to go buy quality stuff in the neighborhood. And so that's what we did. And then we added, like, it was always supposed to be a cafe too. So we did some to-go food, but mostly things like oysters and seafood salads and that kind of thing. So we started doing that, and we did that all to go. But then as all the restrictions were lifted, we probably got about 24 seats in there now. And it's always full for happy hour and oysters. So it's
full cafe in there then, right? Full restaurant. Awesome. Yeah.
It's not we don't have a hot kitchen, but we do a couple hot dishes in there. So we do like a lazy man's cioppino, and we have chowder in there, and we have a really cool poke program where if you like any of the fish that you see in our case and you want us to make a poke with it, that's what we do. So if you like, you're in the mood for tuna poke, we cut however much you want off of our big tuna loin and dice it up and dress it and put it on, steamed rice. And it's terrific.
Oh, delicious. That sounds good. And then, of course, you got other fish that you can throw it on.
So salmon, kampachi, hamachi, scallops. All kinds of stuff that really works well there.
That's awesome. And then, what's great is your pandemic pivots for everything kind of turned into a really good system for you, the pivot to dry goods and, getting that all done was awesome. And then Billingsgate is, worked out. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. We'd like to open more Billingsgates where we got one other one potentially in the works, or it's a different version of it.
Okay.
But hopefully we'll see that in a few months. But yeah, I think we've been very lucky. We've taken opportunities as they've come to us. It's been very organic growth. We don't have some budget where we say, oh, this is where we want to be next year, and this is how we get there. We do accept a lot of opportunities that I think other people would pass up. And we figure, well, if someone can figure out how to do it, then we can.
Yeah, and I noticed you've got some chefs posted up. Like I saw, is it Chef Cantu from California?
Yeah, we work with them all the time.
So I was going to ask you, what's some of the, if you want to highlight some of the restaurants that have your seafood that people...
Yeah, I mean, we pretty much
I mean, I know there's going to be a lot.
The Michelin gambit, but we deliver to, 150 to 200 restaurants every day.
Okay.
And to be honest, I'm just as proud of... all of the Michelin stars we deliver to, as the mom and pops, as the little markets. We have a wonderful collection of partners that we work with.
Yeah. And then I always like to ask everyone, do you have some local favorites that you like to eat at? You can go Boston or the city, whatever you want to do, I like to highlight some of them just because I'll put that list in the show notes. Yep. So,
oh gosh, that's really
a lot
hard
of stuff
because we work with
you work with a lot too. I know,
so it's hard to kind of say these are my favorites.
Yeah,
but I'm super proud of our restaurant partners. Yeah. They are the best restaurants in the Bay Area for sure.
Yeah, no,
and LA. I mean, our LA expansion has gone fairly well so far, and we work with some really terrific restaurants down there.
Yeah, well, it's awesome. To close it out, I ask another thing: is there a kind of a gear guy? Is there a favorite tool, something that you use all the time that everyone should know about?
I think I'm less of a gear guy, but I'll tell you I have a seafood recommendation for everybody.
Oh, there you go.
So whether you're a restaurant chef or not, or a home chef, when you buy your seafood wherever you do, hopefully through us, but when you buy your seafood, wrap it in paper towels and age it for at least one day, if not five, in your fridge, and you will be shocked at the difference. Assuming you're starting with a high quality piece of fish, when you by taking the natural waters out of that fish, it is better raw, and it's better cooked. Either way, you get a more concentrated flavor. You get a better mouthfeel. Everybody talks about, oh, the fresher the fish, the better. And that's true. So you need to start with a very, very fresh fish. Mm-hmm. But if you take that fish and you dry it for a day to 5 days, you will end up with a better product, cooking it or raw.
Wow. I mean, I'm going to try that too.
If you notice, like if you go to your sushi counter, you'll see that they have a lot of their fish wrapped up just like that. And they're doing the same thing. And you have to pull some of the water out of it for serving it raw, or mm-hmm. it ends up being a little bit flabby on the tongue. And you don't want that kind of watery flabbiness. You want it to be, like sushi restaurants want their fish to be a little bit firmer.
Yeah.
And not, you never want like just a soft piece of fish.
They get that nice rice. Cut on yep. them too. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Great. That's awesome advice for the tips for everybody. And the floor is yours. You can give anything else you got going on, promotions, whatever you want to do.
Yeah. For the D2C side of things, we have a promotion going on right now for gift cards for the holidays. I think you buy a $100 gift card, you get a $20 gift card for you. You go to 4starseafood.com and you can see that. And part of what we do as well and why we've worked well with chefs and restaurants is we're here all the time and we'll answer the phone. Our phones don't go off at 10 o'clock in the morning. If you call us at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and you have an emergency, chances are we'll still figure a way to help you. So, we're a seafood customer, seafood company with a very high level of customer service.
Awesome. Thanks, Adrian, for being on. Thanks everybody for listening. Take care, everybody. We're out. As a quick reminder, the restaurants and gear talked about on each episode can be found on my website, foodoriginspodcast.com. I appreciate your support, and thanks for listening.